Donald Trump continues to surge in the polls as he vies for the Republican presidential nomination. Much has been said about his glitzy high-rises and ostentatious behavior. What gets less attention is his deep history in New York City. In the first part of our week-long series on Donald Trump, WNYC Stephen Nesson looks at how his roots in Queens and his relationship with his father shaped the man he is today.
If you want to understand Donald Trump's roots, take a trip to Coney Island to visit Trump Village, a 40-acre housing complex built by his father, Fred.
Oh, no, this bus. I don't want the bus.
Out front, more than a dozen retirees are waiting to board a bus for a day of shopping. They're old friends who've lived here since it opened in 1964. The uniformity of the red bricks and balconies gives the buildings an institutional feel. But these women say Fred Trump is responsible for building a paradise for young families.
He picked a neighborhood up from garbage, nothing.
It was nothing.
Nothing. Gave us a home.
That's Lenore and Sandy, who declined to give their last names because of disputes with the current owner, not a Trump. Lenore remembers paying less than $2,000 at the time for her two-bedroom apartment.
This was a haven for middle-income people. Everyone here was in the same boat.
Walked the beach. It was wonderful.
Fred described the apartments as the Taj Mahal of aesthetically appealing apartment houses. It was his last major project in a career that dates back to the 1920s. And it was Fred Trump's only project that bears the family name. Matthew Lassner is an associate professor of urban studies and planning at Hunter College. He says one thing that sets Fred Trump apart from other developers of his time and today was that he built and managed buildings.
One could profit often handsomely by building and selling immediately before you even got a tenant in, and Trump did not operate that way. He was interested in the well-being of the neighborhoods in which he invested.
Along the way, Fred instilled a strong work ethic in his five kids. He didn't believe in taking time off. There were no weekends in the Trump family. When he wasn't working on his housing projects, he was cultivating his local political connections. At Trump Village, Donald learned all aspects of the business, including hands-on construction. Longtime tenant Lenore says Fred's wife Mary even had a role.
His wife would come out dressed to kill with a chauffeur, come in with a little bag and go empty out the laundry machines, the quarters, and go back into her car and go home to her palace without quarters.
Maybe not quite a palace, at least by current standards. Their red brick colonial in Jamaica Estates, Queens, had 23 rooms and 6 white columns at the entrance. Nice. But it wasn't Manhattan. Fred Trump did indulge in one show of wealth, 2 blue Cadillacs with the license plates FT1 and FT2. Julia Vitullo-Martin with the Regional Plan Association once sat down with Fred in the 1970s to talk about real estate. She said Fred was elegant, but unassuming.
The funny thing, he tended to disapprove of flamboyance. Generally, developers try to be judicious publicly. They're careful because developing successfully requires a great deal of discretion and, you know, secrecy.
Donald took to the family business early, inheriting his father's political connections and eventually a tidy nest egg. But when it came to style and strategy, that's where the two Trumps parted ways. According to Donald, the turning point came when he was 18 years old. At the opening ceremonies for the Verrazano Narrows Bridge, he recalls watching politicians give speech after speech while the bridge's engineer stood to the side, ignored. Trump told the New York Times in 1980, quote, "I realized then and there that if you let people treat you how they want, you'll be made a fool." He says it was something he never forgot. Quote, "I don't want to be made anybody's sucker." And yet the engineer, Othmar Ammann, was praised that day. In fact, it was one of the first orders of business.
"My friends, I ask that you now look upon the greatest living bridge engineer, perhaps the greatest of all time."
Still, whether he was listening to the speech or not, he wouldn't have been standing on that bridge if it wasn't for his father. For WNYC, I'm Stephen Nesson.